So Josh and I thought this morning we would spend a little time reflecting on all we've learned, all we experienced over the last 200 years, and where we're going from here. So, Reverend Kate challenged us to think about what is it we want, what's the legacy we want to leave for those people who will be celebrating our tricentennial in just 100 years. So, it's not too soon to start preparing, right? So, the events of the past year really have given me a new appreciation for the history of our church, both the church and our community, because we've had a lot of things around the celebration of Meadville in 1825 as well that was sponsored by our church, but really for the whole community. And one of the things that really impressed me was the commitment of the earlier settlers to make this place a success, to really thinking forward about what they needed to do to create a really thriving community that would care for one another. And most of us are familiar with some of the things that Harmjan Heidekoper has done to, and many others. We always talk about Harmjan Heidekoper. I also want to say there were a lot of other people who were involved, right? So I think about one in particular that I think we don't mention enough is Margaret Shippen, who moved here. She was a Unitarian before she came. She was in the church in Philadelphia and came here in 1825. And I don't think it's any coincidence that not long after she arrived, we started a church. So I think, you know, these are things hard to document. They're always not always recorded. But I suspect that she had a large part in the formation of the early church. So it's also, I want to remember folks like Margaret Shippen. But there were lots of other ways that people collaborated. One that I found out about that I thought was particularly impressive was that in 1800, so just 12 years after the town was founded, in 1800, there were about 150 people living here, maybe 200. They had maybe three dozen log homes, mostly log, a few others. And the state had passed legislation that said that if we could raise $4,000 in 4 months, that this would become the county seat, because the county was formed in 1800. And $4,000, just to give you some context, $4,000 is about as much as a skilled artisan might earn in 10 years. If you were a laborer, it'd probably take you 20 years, right? So it's a large chunk of money. And there are 150 people here. And they had to raise $4,000 to create a secondary school. They raised the money in 2 days, right? They were committed to making this the county seat, to making this be successful. It took a little bit longer to get the school started, but the school was actually started, the Meadville Academy started in 1805 and continued for another 50 or 60 years as a secondary school here in Meadville. In 1815, as most of you probably know, a group of people, including Harmjan Heidekoper and others who helped found this church, collaborated together to help found Allegheny College. In 1820, the college had been gifted what was then one of the best libraries in America to the college as their college library. Unfortunately, it got as far as Erie, and there was no money to ship it to Meadville, so they needed to raise $500 very quickly, because that's how much it was going to cost to ship, get the shipment down here, because the people who were doing the shipping said, you know, this is not worth anything to us, but we could certainly use it in the boilers of the ship if you can't use it. And so the community raised, in just a few days, again, they raised $500, which again was roughly a year's wages, so that the library could be shipped here. And then they didn't have any place to put the library, so they stored it around town in various buildings and helped build Bentley Hall, which was the first building on Allegheny's campus. So there are lots of ways that people came together to do things. Another thing that I found very interesting is the first church, what's called the Brick Church, was the name of the church. It's often talked about as the Presbyterian Church, but it wasn't built as the Presbyterian Church. It was built as the community church. Any Christian organization could meet in the Brick Church, and the Unitarians met there. For the first several years of the church's founding, we met in the Brick Church, along with many others. The Methodists met there, the Episcopalians met there, of course, the Presbyterians. So I don't know I have no idea where I was going with that. But in any case, the church was built, you know, as a community church. The thing I was going to say is there was, and this kind of connects to the next one, the Unitarians did meet there for the first few years. The other thing that impressed me was the courage of the early, the people who founded this church. Because they were meeting in the church because they considered themselves a Christian denomination. But Unitarianism is a heresy for most Protestants. And so they got in a lot of trouble with the, and if you read the newspapers at the time, 1825 to 1835 or so, that was the place where you would argue things about, all kinds of stuff got argued in the newspapers. They're interesting at that time. But there was a lot of condemnation of the Unitarians, and the newspaper refused to publish the rebuttals from the Unitarians. And so Harmyam Haidekoper actually then started publishing his own tracts to respond to the attacks from outside. But one of the things that impresses me about that is the courage it took to be a Unitarian. Because churches at the time were the center of social life and the center of political life and the center of economic life. This was the place where you connected to be successful. So if you were somehow setting yourselves apart, right, you ran a real risk of not being successful. Right? And it wasn't like they could run down to Pittsburgh or someplace and do their business there. Running down to Pittsburgh was a multi-day, that was a multi-day trip. It was 5 to 6, maybe 7 days to get to New York or Philadelphia, right? So there's a lot of courage to set themselves up and say, we don't believe that material, we don't understand Christianity in the way that the rest of you do, and we're going to start our own denomination, our own faith. And they took a lot of personal risk in order to make that happen. So in spite of the criticism, they persevered and they prospered, fortunately for us. And it's also interesting to note that, and I don't know the exact numbers of the other churches, but the Unitarian Church by mid-century, middle of the 19th century, a while back, was one of the largest churches by congregation size in Meadville. So we can aspire for that again. So they did quite a job. The other thing that they did is they really lived their values. Indication of that is one of the reasons for box pews is that they were easy to kind of distinguish, like how many there were, and so what they did then is the early churches didn't have pledge drives, but the Catholic churches got their money through selling indulgences and other things like that, that were, Protestants rejected. So Protestants had to raise money somehow. So what they did is they thought, well, we'll sell pews. Right, and the further up the pew was, the more there was pews over on this side in our church when it was first built. I'm guessing those sold for more money because they were really visible, right, facing them and close to the minister. And then the further back you got, the cheaper they were. And if you couldn't afford a pew, then you had to stand in the back. That's how the early Protestants did it. And we started that way for the first few decades. But by the middle of the century, we had recognized that there was a certain elitism about that structure. And so we stopped selling or renting. They were often renting pews and made them all open for all. And so, and started doing something akin, I'm not sure if they were doing pledges then or exactly how they managed the finances, but they'd figured out some other way to manage that so they could be more equal. It was one of those early signs of understanding the inherent worth and dignity of each person, right? So we could do worse, I think, as we move into the next 100 years than to demonstrate a similar amount of commitment and courage and living our values.
I just wanted to add a couple of things to what Rick is saying about commitment. I mean, for me, the main thing I came away from our bicentennial celebration was I was inspired. I mean, I was inspired by the kinds of things that Rick's talking about from our history, but I'm also inspired with what you all did to make that whole thing come together, each in your own individual way. I mean, Beth Eder came back, Allison Wohler came back, those ministers that we interviewed, hearing their words, it's like, wow, what a tapestry we have. And especially when I think back about Beth and Allison and their feeling of home that they had here, it was amazing. And then I think of all of the work that all of you put in to making the bicentennial celebration, from the thing that's hanging in the back, I don't know what to call it, but it's a stunningly beautiful thing there that has been created in the back, to these meetings that we had in my back deck of people who just, you just give them a bunch of tasks and then they just go and do everything. And then some of you would just do things on your own and create these beautiful things. Corinne's magnum opus book that you may have had a chance to see. If you haven't had a chance to see it, there's a slideshow, a narrated slideshow version also that we have access to that we can share. I mean, just amazing things. All the work that went into putting out the food and the different decades, the things that Jane Ellen created for our pews of all of our, it's just, I was blown away. And the thing is, it doesn't take the same kind of courage that was what Rick was talking about to express our faith these days. I mean, we're still a minority, that's for sure. But I don't think we're quite ready, we're quite going to be pilloried in the paper the way that they were back then. But it is a time that, as you know very well, when it's really easy to just check out because it's so aversive to read the news and to see what's really happening. And the fact that we have a sanctuary and that you will take your time and energy and put it here. You don't have to do this. This is not a place that you are required to come. It's, you know, we don't promise you heaven and hell and things like that. You come here because you have something that you believe needs to be established and sustained. And I'm just inspired by that. And so we have created that for ourselves, but we've created it as a place for others who can come for 200 years and hopefully for many more. So I'm inspired. We did it.
I'm ready.
I think it's worth asking ourselves. I think it's worth asking ourselves what it is we want people to be think of when they think of this church 100 years ago. In 325, they'll be celebrating their tricentennial, as I mentioned earlier. So what do we want people to know about us, to see from us? What is it we'd like to be remembered for or noticed for? And I hope one of the things that will stand out is the way that we have really tried to live to our values, that we've made ourselves available to our community, that we've been welcoming, and they've let people know who we are and what we stand for and how we want to be with others. I appreciate a lot that we do around that already. I love the fact that we put up on the signboard some really short, succinct statements that say a little bit about who is in this church, who is here. I like the fact that we have a pride flag that we hang on the front. I'm thrilled that we support the Early Learning Center, that we support daily AA meetings during the week. And I'm often noticed that when the community events, that we're one of the few churches that shows up for just about every community event in the Diamond. We're there to be with the community. And we serve soup on Saturdays for those who need. And we do more, and we keep looking for more ways we can be more engaged. And I really appreciate that about this church, and I hope we continue to nourish and act on this impulse to live our values openly. I also appreciate the refuge that our church has been and is for so many. It's interesting to note in the book that the Reverend Wilbur wrote about the first 75 years of the church. He wrote that 125 years ago, he wrote about that. But in the early part, he wrote, and I quote now, "In its general religious tendencies, this part of the state was markedly conservative, as it remains, relatively speaking, even to this day." And I can say 125 years later, that's still true. It's a markedly conservative area. Not everyone feels welcomed and supported by the larger community, but I hope they feel welcomed and supported here. And that's a real, I think, a strength of our church. I want everyone to feel welcomed and included. I think we all do. And I hope that will still be true 100 years from now. At the top of the church's page, it says, we describe ourselves as a free, a beacon for free thinkers since 1825. We could also say we've served as a refuge for those who need a place, a home, some place to feel comfortable since 1825. And I hope we'll continue to be that, a safe place for people to come. I've also been, having served many years on the board, I continue to appreciate how much our forebears not only took care of their communities, but also made sure to take care of those who came later. Right? They blessed us with this beautiful building. I mean, this is truly a wonderful temple. And the building next door, we have a substantial investment funds that help underwrite our operating costs. And I hope that when in 100 years, when folks look back, they'll note that we too paid forward the gifts that were given to us. So in 100 years, I hope people will see that we live our values, that we're committed to creating a safe place for everyone in our community, and that we're committed to maintaining this, to doing what we can to make sure this space is available for generations to come. And I'd really encourage you to think about what you would like this church to be and think about what you can do to make that happen.
I'll just add my brief two cents here. One of the values that I think that Rick is talking about that I really appreciate and that I hope we are remembered for is it's actually a skill along with the value. It's the willingness and the skill and the ability to pay attention to what's happening. It's, as you know, just as I was saying earlier, it's a difficult time. People feel scattered, not just because of the great amount of need there is out there and because of the great amount of fear that's come to the center of our lives and that our opening words and our closing hymn, same thing, we'll talk about dispelling that fear. But it's also easy to get just caught in minutiae and check out in that way. The fact that the meditation crowd has been, the meditation practice and the group that comes to that has taken off in our church, I think is just an indication of also that value of paying attention. A number of years ago, the board, this is coming out of the pandemic, the board was saying, okay, well, it was a tough time. We weren't clear that we were actually going to make it through. And so we were thinking, what's really needed? And we were thinking, well, we have this beautiful building, this one and the other one, that sort of could be a real community resource. And we developed this whole plan on how we would use this to support the community. And as it turns out, nobody wanted it. It wasn't, there was plenty of space in town. That was not what was needed at that moment. And the board, to its credit, I think, said, wow, okay, well, we're going to offer this. We'll see what happens. But then we will turn ourselves to when we see what's happening in our community, what's really needed. So the things that have grown out, the shelter area in Meadville that Jane Ellen talked about, the soup on Saturdays that has come, the meditation group, and also the events committee and the very many community events they've supported, we found ways to take our energy and our time and to put them where we see a need, not necessarily where we think it should be or what we think would be the right thing, but when we see in front of us what the need is. And so my hope going forward is, of course, that we do that not just with our community, but with each other, that we look around, that we connect with each other, that we pay attention to what's needed here within us, because it's developing that kind of free and fearless connection that actually then transfers to the way we live our lives. So that is my wish.
Our focus in October was our bicentennial, and it was a great thing. I'm glad we did that. But normally, October is Pledge Month. That's when we talk about pledging for the next year. And so we're going to have a really short pledge drive this year. We're hoping it'll be today. So I'll just say a few words about that. And so, as I said, I hope most of you will renew your pledges today. I also hope that the events of the past year, and especially the past month, have given you all an opportunity to really think about and appreciate all the stuff that's come before us and how much potential and how much potential there is for this church, and how much this church really means to so many people. That was one of the many things that struck me that I didn't say. It's a number of people I talked to over the, not just at the bicentennial, but over the last few weeks, who told me about how important the Unitarian, this Unitarian church had been to them at some point in their lives, because it is such a unique resource here in Meadville. And so one of the, as part of that, for me, as inspired, Carol and I talked about it this morning. She couldn't be here today, which was unfortunate, but Carol and I talked this morning, and we agreed we were going to increase our pledge by 10% for next year, because I've really come to appreciate just how much this church means to this community. The other thing I realized, partly because Deb and I are deeply involved in the project, is all the renovations that are happening next door, which Deb and I have been coordinating. None of those would have happened if Jill Asura hadn't remembered how much this church had meant to her as a young woman growing up here in Meadville, and left us a really substantial bequest in her estate, when that's funded really all of the renovations so far and all that we have left planned. And that's huge. So the other thing that Carol and I did when we updated our will recently is our attorney advised us that, you know, that rather than leaving money to the church through your will, make them a beneficiary of your IRA, then they don't get taxed, right? So so we've added the church as a beneficiary to our IRAs, which I'm hoping you won't see in 30 years, because I will be using it until then, right? So, but you know, that's another way that we can think about to support this church. So I hope you will, the events of the past month will have inspired you to think about what you can do to help maintain this beautiful community and resource for our Meadville.
Josh? Yeah, just a couple of words. We had a couple of workshops by Melissa McCarty, who works up at the College and Development, who came and talked to us about all of these various ways you can give to the church. And as I was mentioning before, you know, this is never required. It's a donation, an offering from your heart, and from, because it, I was joking about the gift of being generous, but it is a real thing. That you really feel good when you give. We never want people to offer funds that they don't have or that would make their lives difficult to live, but we are inspired. And so what we've done this year is we have some pledge cards that the ushers are going to come and hand out. And if you're a pledging member or friend, again, not required, but if you are, please, if you'll come up and hand those out, then please take one of these. We made it really simple. Do we just want to keep going at the same? When I do these pledge calls every year, I get a lot of people say, just put me down for whatever it was last year. I don't remember what it was. So we have a box that says, put me down for whatever it was that I'm doing. We have a box that says, put me down for 10% more, which is what Rick's doing and what I'm doing. And then we have another option. Now, we are going to have a discussion after this service in a few minutes about changing the fiscal year. So what you commit to today may mean you're committing for the next year, or it may mean just for the next 6 months. But the pledge is always yours to decide how much you actually give anyway. The pledging process is just so we can have a budget, numbers to work with when we plan the budget for next year. So we encourage you, it's not required, but we encourage you to they'll hand them out now, thank you. And then by the end of the service, you can drop them off in the back there to the ushers, or you can give them to me. And if you... I'll just say, you know, I'm sure this doesn't apply to that many people here, but, you know, if this is a beautiful time, though, if you don't want to wait till 30 years from now when maybe, you know, we won't be here anymore, you know, there's been this giant stock run up, and if you had, like, NVIDIA stock that's, like, really, really big, and you know it's going to crash eventually, it's a bubble, so now is the time to donate it, because when you donate it with this giant gain, we get the whole thing. If you sold it, then you have to pay taxes on it. Then you can only donate a little bit. So give us the whole thing, and we'll take it, and we'll get the whole benefit. Just a thought, you know. That's one of Melissa's talks. Okay. So anyway, that's the process there. Obviously, if there are questions you have about the pledging process, please talk to me or talk to anybody else in the church that you know. We really benefit from and really appreciate your generosity. And as it turns out, people 100 years from now and beyond may look back at us and say, man, those people, they really pulled it together. Remember those really terrible years? They hung in and they made it happen for us, just like we're saying to them.